Good morning, everyone. Happy Thursday morning and welcome to SASS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show, the show where we talk about everything and anything entertainment. You're with one of your regular hosts, Nick Angus. We're currently waiting the arrival of Hannah Schauder, but in the studio with me, we have our very special guest for today, Ben Polizon. Welcome to the studio, Ben.
Thank you, Nick.
How are you feeling to be on the show?
I'm so excited. I'm really, really excited.
And you've also already had some experience at SYN already, so you're a bit of a regular here, which is fantastic.
What can I say? I'm on Panorama Tuesdays. Everyone tune in, please.
Very, very nice. And we've got an awesome topic today, Ben. What are we speaking about?
We're going to be talking about foreign films, foreign entertainment. I think it's going to be really interesting.
It is a large industry, as anyone can imagine. And I think the pieces we're delving into today really, really unpack, you know, what cinema can be and what foreign cinema can be and what foreign TV can be as well, which is really exciting.
Yeah, certainly outside the realm of English-speaking countries. It's definitely very interesting to see how other languages can tell very similar stories despite maybe cultural differences and stuff. It's quite in-depth.
And we've got some award-winning entertainment pieces as well lined up today, which is going to be very exciting. But as always with our special guests, we're going to induct you, Ben, first. So on today's show, I would like you to tell me your favourite film, TV series and stage production.
Oh, too easy.
Too easy.
I hate these questions. It's so much nicer to just say a film and get over it. But I think I've got some. My favourite film is Lady Bird. Just a beautiful film, so lovely, so well written. Mm-hmm. Greta Gerwig's an absolute queen. Mm-hmm. For TV show, got to keep it a classic. Summer Heights High.
Got to keep it classic.
Got to keep it classic.
We've spoken about that on this show and we've absolutely loved it. We all love it here. Fantastic
series. It's too good. It's too good.
Yes.
And for stage, I was really lucky enough to go and see Harry Potter and the Cursed Child and it really just blew me away. Just absolutely... Yeah, shocked me. It was just brilliant.
It's really, really awesome to, I think, go see, you know, a theatre spectacle and to just have something like that that's really, really amazing and just to blow you away. I've heard all the reviews about it. I've heard have been phenomenal. And I think I'm excited because I'm going to be seeing it in May. And I think it's just amazing to have something there that just is so different, but then just so captivating. And it isn't a long show, but I think it's going to be really cool.
Oh, it really is just phenomenal. I would just, like, you just have to go and see it. I know it is expensive, but seriously, it's the show of a lifetime.
It is, and I think it's one of those shows, yeah. I think it's gonna be staying around for quite a long time. So.
Oh, it's here till February next year. You've got time.
Well, there are some fantastic entertainment pieces, Ben. You are successfully inducted into the show. And just a reminder, we're going to be looking at the foreign theme today. We've also got some fantastic bops song lists line up for you today. So stick around. But for now, we're going to go to our first song break. This is Saturday Sun by Vance Joy. And remember, always keep up with your screen and stage. And we'll be right back.
And welcome back to SASS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show. Surprise, Hannah's here.
Wait, what happened?
A little bit of SASS. I did come late today, I apologise, but honestly, the show's better for it, so it's okay.
It is fantastic. We are all here now, and if you forgot, we have a very special guest today with us. Ben Polizon is in the studio, and we are about to talk about everything foreign, so foreign entertainment, foreign films, TV series and stage productions, and how they have made their impact in the world, and very much their prominent impact, which is really exciting. So first, we're going to be delving into an Oscar-winning film. This film won 3 awards at the Oscar ceremony earlier this year in 2019. And it is the one and only Roma. And I think it's going to be a really cool film to delve into because it is very, very prominent in its cinematography. It won one of its awards for that, which we'll delve into. But also its storyline is truly heartwarming. As always, first, a quick synopsis and then we'll delve right into it.
Love me a good synopsis.
We love a synopsis to start.
We love a good synopsis.
Good place to start.
Cleo is one of 2 domestic workers who help Antonio and Sofia take care of their 4 children in 1970s Mexico City. Complications soon arise when Antonio suddenly runs away with his mistress and Cleo finds out that she's pregnant. When Sofia decides to take the kids on vacation, she invites Cleo for a much-needed getaway to clear her mind and bond with the family.
Ooh, cute.
It is a very heartwarming storyline, I think, to put it simply. Mm. And I think let's now delve into where its wins at the Oscars came from. The Oscars are the most renowned award ceremony for film at the moment. Mm. And so this film, it won 3 Oscars for Best Cinematography, Best Direction and Best Foreign Film. So I think let's start with its cinematography. Now, Ben, you have seen this film and what did you find about its cinematography to be so amazing?
it's an impressive feat to do what director Alfonso Cuarón managed in that film. There's a lot of panning shots in the film, especially right at the end at this scene on the beach. He actually goes into the water with the camera.
Yeah.
And it's just, it stays perfectly flat, perfectly still. It's on a tripod or a dolly or something.
Yeah.
And it really is just astounding. And he does, obviously, Nick mentioned it when we were talking before, this panning shot through a Mexican city street. Yeah. Mexico City Street, sorry. And that's just brilliant. I mean, the effort and the work that that takes is undeniable.
Because it, by itself, that shot is phenomenal. But to think of the work that would go behind creating that shot, you know, shutting down the street, making sure everything is perfect. The lighting would be huge. To get that set of lighting correct, it's a huge, huge effort. One thing I found really prominent about the cinematography was how it related to the locations. So it would really contrast, you know, the bustle of the Colonia Roma neighbourhood in which most of the film takes place, but versus then the beaches of Tuxpan in Mexico City. Or in Mexico. And so every location was thought, you know, and put thoroughly for its meaning and impact. And that was really, really important. So, you know, the claustrophobic versus the free. And I think the cinematography really helped with that and to emphasise those points.
That's
now,
a good point.
Another award was obviously Best Direction. So Alfonso Cuarón. And he's done some fantastic work in the past. Ben, we were talking about it before. He was behind Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. And,
really?
You know, it's really interesting, to see these, you know, directors come out. Also, Gravity, another film with Sandra Bullock and George Clooney.
What an absolute, like, variety of work, you know, going from space to Harry Potter.
I know.
Oh, Mexico.
How did you find the directing in this, Ben?
It is... I mean, with cinematography and directing, they are different, but to be doing both at the same time, that's difficult. And he pulls it off beautifully. The shots in it, a lot of the actors are untrained. Unfortunately, I can't remember the main actress's name, but this is her first film, and she was not only nominated for Best Actress, but and deservingly so, she gives a great performance.
Yeah.
She gives a phenomenal performance.
Yeah, definitely.
And it is really impressive to see all the directing elements and how he just makes it work for a film that is a little bit... It's not the what we're used to.
Yeah,
It is a different story.
Definitely. And I think along that, the storyline that he weaved, it was obviously semi-autobiographical. So it actually had a deeper connection to his own, you know, personal storyline. And I think that always
that's
makes
really
it beautiful.
Nice. Yeah, we always tend to come back to that, you know, sort of autobiographical true stories. We've done, you know, a good couple of episodes on it and how, you know, inserting a little bit of that, you know, autobiographical component can really enhance a storyline.
Yeah, it really, I think it gives it that depth that you need and that complexity and just makes it much more impactful for viewers. That's my personal opinion, but I think honestly having that connection there and that personal connection to the film is really, really important. Just some end notes. I would love to just quickly touch on the film's grayscale kind of filter. It's a very stark choice. It's a very bold choice, but I actually found that quite ironically, it enhanced the mise-en-scene elements, the lighting and the setting. It's not like often, you know, obviously when there's colour and there's you know, boldness and there's prominence, you know, you notice that. But for some reason, the grayscale really enhanced this, I found. It enhanced, that prominence and it really, really lightened kind of certain elements. So you would go from, you know, really glaring Mexican city days to really scary dark nights. I think that was really interesting. What were your thoughts on that?
No, you hit the nail on the head. The grayscale monochrome look is just brilliant. It is really interesting to think. Mexico City, I've never been personally, but you can imagine just how much color is in that place. And to totally just get rid of that, take it out of the film, is a massive choice, a bold choice, like you said. And it does work. It really enhances other elements of the film, like the acting. So, brilliant choice from the director.
Fantastic. So, I think we can definitely say that this film was very much deserving of all these awards at the Oscars and all its other awards. And I believe it's going to go throughout this year and really not only redefine what cinema can be, but redefine in how, you know, prominent cinema can be and the awards it can consequently win. We've done a big discussion on Roma. We still have another film to go, as well as two TV series and a stage segment. So we're going to go to a quick song break, but we'll be right back. This is Sass, the Screen, Air and Stage Show. And that was Tied Up Right Now by Passers. We've got some absolute bops coming up on the show today. And what show are you on? You are on Sass, the Screen, Air and Stage Show, the show where we talk about everything and anything entertainment. You're with our regular hosts, Nick Angus and Hannah Shout, as well as our special guest for today, Ben Polizon. How are you feeling? We always do a little bit of a check-in after the... Yeah, it's always time for a check-in.
We like to make sure our hosts are happy. And they're having fun. You have some water.
Is it all going well?
It's horrifying. It's just a mess. You should see the studio right now.
It's an absolute mess.
Oh, it's a an atom bomb's gone off in here. Oh, my God.
So, it's Ben, lovely. I believe you have an extra little film to add to our discussion. We're looking at the foreign genre today, and we just looked at the movie Roma, but you've got a little extra one for us.
Yes, we're just going to quickly go over this film. I have to mention it. It was my favorite film of last year, and it really is brilliant. I highly recommend watching it. It's called Shoplifters. It's a Japanese film, and the synopsis... on the margins of Tokyo, a dysfunctional band of outsiders is united by fierce loyalty and a penchant for petty theft. When the young son is arrested, secrets are exposed that upend their tenuous, below-the-radar existence.
Interesting. I think it's always good to on the show to kind of give a little bit of a synopsis, not to spoil too much.
No.
And just to kind of give a bit of a hint about, you know, what it entails. And I think this is a really intriguing storyline.
You need it for this film. Yeah. It is a slow burner.
Yeah.
It is a slow burner.
Yeah.
You don't really know what's happening at the start.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questions.
I think a question on that. An ambiguous start. I think Roma, it also does a little bit of that.
Yes.
It has this very slow start to it that you're kind of like, oh, okay, it takes a little bit of time to understand the setting, understand the characters. Where are we? What time period are we in? Do you think an ambiguous start to any film, it actually increases the impact that it has? Or do you think it can sometimes be a little bit jarring?
It really depends on how you do it. If it's done well, it'll get you thinking about it will make you want to know more about these characters.
Which is a positive. Mm.
That's exactly what Shoplifters does. It's, you know, there's something just a little bit not right about this family.
Yeah.
And then it really comes out at the end and you just, it's just
shocking.
You have
shocking. Like that aww moment.
It's just like, oh, wow. And great actors. I'll mention that it won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival, which is... You know, some would argue on the same par as Best Picture. And it won a ton of other awards for the Asia region.
Mm.
It really is, I would say, obviously the Japanese are well known for their animations, but this is just a fantastic live-action film.
Amazing. It's really, really, I think it's great to just see these films because obviously sometimes they don't make it to the big screens. So I think if you can go see a film that maybe isn't up there with, you know, the popularity and everything, but even just in essence, it may just have a beautiful storyline and a really intriguing storyline. And I think this is a prime example and Roma is a prime example. Roma can be found on Netflix, but for its cinema release, it wasn't released, you know, in all cinemas. It was very selective, like Shoplifters. And I think even just having that selective vibe to it, it makes the film almost more unique because it's like, oh, I can only see it here. I can only see it there. Not, I can see it everywhere.
Mm.
That's actually a really interesting segue into our television segment because these two TV shows that we're looking at are both on Netflix.
Okay.
Which is really interesting.
And what are we looking at today, Hannah? We always do a bit of a, you know,
who is she? So we have two really interesting TV shows that we're looking at. Like I said, they're both on Netflix and they're both foreign. One much more well-known than the other, but I think it is worth, you know, acknowledging the two just for the comparisons. The first one where I'm going to quickly touch on is a show called Shtisel, which is an Israeli drama television series. And it's about a Haredi family, Haredi being like ultra-religious Jewish, a Haredi family living in an ultra-Orthodox neighborhood of Jerusalem reckons with love, loss, and the doldrums of daily life. So pretty much the show, it's like Jewish Modern Family, but more dramatic. It's pretty much like...
And you look at the success of Modern Family. We actually haven't spoken about it on this show. I'd love to look at it 1 week. You look at the success of Modern Family, and I think even taking that formula is... You're guaranteed some sort of success, which is great. And I think that's what this TV series does.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's a very sobering show because... Mm-hmm. you know, it's about these ultra-religious Jews living in Israel who, you know, have this particular lifestyle, but seeing that they pretty much go through the same daily struggles as everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot of really, you know, I think if you're a Jew as well, you're going to like the show just because, you know, you have situations where it's like, oh my God, someone, you know, like denounced their Judaism and, oh, this person's not finding a proper wife. And, you know, it's a lot of like those Jewish issues, but very much more dramatic.
Mm.
So if you want to find that, that is on Netflix. It's in Hebrew, of course, but you can get the subtitles. That's a lot of fun. The other one I want to talk about, which is much more well-known, is called Money Heist,
yes,
which is a Spanish television series on Netflix. Ben's looking at me like,
I've only heard good things.
Yeah,
I've
only heard exactly good things.
So, yeah, pretty much the same as me. I was introduced to it. I'll give you a very quick synopsis. A criminal mastermind who goes by the Professor has a plan to pull off the biggest heist in recorded history to print billions of euros in the Royal Mint of Spain. To help him carry out this ambitious plan, he recruits 8 people with certain abilities and who have nothing to lose. So I'm going to put it out there that this is a fantastic show. And if you're going to, if you don't really want to commit to the show that much, it's worth at least watching the first like few episodes just to understand like how well made it is, you know, because you guys were talking about cinematography before and this show has fantastic cinematography, but the editing is off the charts. So we're talking, you know, being able to like cut to flashbacks and then also, you know, you cut to like a scene from like a few months ago of someone explaining something as they're carrying out the plan. You know, just even like that sort of like that parallel editing is so fantastic.
I must say, I believe editing is one of the film techniques that can really make or break a film.
Absolutely.
I must say there are films 100%. Where if the editing is on point and it's balanced but it's varied and it's prominent, I think it excels. But sometimes when there's not enough editing, it can just go a little bit bland. Sometimes when there's too much editing, it can really jar the storyline.
So you've really got to have that nice balance and all the more makes you appreciate that good editing when you see it. And this show totally nails it on the head.
Exactly.
I'll also make a point of the acting as well. There's like no specific names I can give except that really every character has a really good personality and backstory behind them. The show does take its time for you to find out more about everybody as the heist goes on. And I think the most interesting thing about the whole show really is watching this progression of them organizing the heist and in the middle of the heist and, you know, slowly seeing, you know, some things are falling apart, other things are developing, some characters start feuding. And, like, the show really takes its time with, like, showing you each day that the heist lasts and their whole plan. And you just fall in love with the Professor because he's the mastermind. Yeah. Because you think, like, oh, my God, every time, like, something's about to happen, he just turns around. Because you also, of course, get the perspective of the law enforcement team who's trying to stop this heist.
Yes.
And every time you think, like, oh, they're going to do it, they're going to make a break. Nah.
So I've got a bit of an interesting question because these days we're seeing a lot of films revolving around the heist. You know, Money Heist, Jewel Heist. We've talked about the Ocean series, Ocean's 8, 9, 10, 11, whatever, however many there are these days now. And we've talked that this is a very common trait to be, you know, expressing in film, in TV. I think it is quite a niche area and I think it can be quite hard to excel. It's almost like editing in that you have to really kind of balance how it's expressed and also balance, you know, the suspense, the surprise in it. So do you think that this TV series, in the scope of all, do you think it has enough to kind of be different or do you think it can fall along the line of maybe just go in that streamline, you know, what we're used to, what we were used to seeing? And on that question, whatever the answer is to that question, what do you think needs to happen to redefine this heist kind of subgenre, you could even say?
Ooh, it's a really loaded question.
Yeah.
I know, it's a bit of a double question.
I think if you're going to put it in the context of, you know, Ocean's 11, I would say that this TV series sort of does redefine the genre just from the perspective of showing more what happens in the heist.
Yes.
Really showing all those little details, really showing the thinking of everybody involved.
Because sometimes it can be the way that, you know, they have all the lead up to the heist, then the heist just happens in, you know, 5
That's
minutes.
Right.
So to kind of have the formalities of the heist
play out.
No,
pretty much Ocean's 11 and absolutely no sass because Ocean's 11 is like a fantastic movie. But it is a lot like that where it's a planet. Oh, it happened.
It happened.
Great.
And it's just like that.
Like, no problems whatsoever.
Yes.
Why is this is very much more nitty gritty?
Yeah.
And also, this show touches a lot on sort of the moral, like the moral thinking that comes behind these kinds of heists, you know, because the characters, they struggle a lot with, you know, when do you justify murder? When do you justify teaming up on someone on your own team?
Yeah.
That the isolation that comes with pulling off a heist.
Yeah, definitely.
They really do delve into those more psychological issues, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah. True crime, which is, I kind of feel like this comes under, the true crime genre is just blown up.
Oh, it's huge.
I mean, really, you got Making a Murderer, podcast serial. It's just seriously, it's huge now. And it is really important to try and tell a different story. And it's good to hear that a show like Money Heist is taking it in what I would say is a more realistic direction.
Yes.
The world's not perfect and your heist isn't going to work out.
Yeah.
So,
sorry, honey.
Sorry.
It's not today.
Kind of got to figure out how to get around that.
But that is important to kind of have that realism inserted into it.
To be able to tell that story is, I would say, far more interesting than hearing someone like in the Ocean series just pull it off.
And yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, they kind of have different elements to them. I think the Ocean series, it's very much about, you know,
more fun.
I know I've brought it up all the time, but the mise-en-scene, like, it's, you know, beautiful to look at. It's bold. It's, you know, lights, camera, action. And I think that's great. But I think, yeah, with Money Heist, it's saying, let's maybe just put our focus towards the storyline. Let's make a deep storyline.
Yeah.
Let's make an impactful storyline. Mm. And then from there, we can build from there. I think it depends where you kind of have your building blocks. Whether you're like, I want to make this, you know, a blockbuster, it's visually spectacular. I want to make this a really deep storyline that people are going to be talking about. Mm-hmm. I think it's wherever you choose to start from there and then kind of choose to go from there, that's kind of where it can go. So
a bit of
interesting points to, you know, leave the audience on, and maybe a question to the audience, you know, what makes a successful heist film? You know, is there a specific element out there that does make a successful heist film? If you would like to answer that question or have any other thoughts, ideas or opinions, do not hesitate to get in contact with us at facebook.com/sassshow or sass_show for our Instagram. But until then, we're going to go to a quick song break. We've got plenty more discussion and plenty more bops coming up today. So stick around. This is Sass, the Screen, Air and Stage Show.
And I might just say that, keeping with our foreign theme today, it's time for a little bit of foreign music.
Oh, we love a segue.
And welcome back to Sass, the Screen, Air and Stage Show. Oh, that was a bull there. A little bit of sass. We are exploring the genre of foreign entertainment today with our lovely guest, Ben. And at the moment, we've looked at a lot of really interesting pieces. We've looked at Schtissel and Money Heist for our TV segment, and Roma and Shoplifters for our film. And we are now heading on over to our theatre segment.
We've got an interesting theatre segment today because it actually has a little bit of a deeper connection to both Ben and I. Ben and I went to the same high school, and we were fortunate enough to be involved in this play. It is a play by Frederik Durmat. It is The Visit, and it is an absolute phenomenal play. It is very complex, very entertaining, and I think you can agree, Ben, it was a really good play to do. What did you think?
I did love it. I really, really loved it. It's a long play, but it's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious.
It is a tragicomedy, so it does have the tragic elements and the comedic elements, and we're going to be speaking a little bit more about what that kind of genre or means in the, you know, theatre industry. But for now, we'll do a quick synopsis, and then we'll delve right into it.
I'm going to apologise in advance because I've gotten up this Wikipedia synopsis. I don't know if it's the most accurate synopsis, so I'm going to read it out and you guys can fact check me. An enormously wealthy older woman returns to her former hometown with a dreadful bargain. She wants the townspeople to kill the man who got her pregnant, then jilted her. Something. In exchange, she will provide enough money to revitalize the town, and eventually the townspeople agree. Is that pretty accurate?
That's pretty on point. Jilted, abandoned. So,
abandoned.
Exactly,
okay.
Right. So it is quite, you know, looking at that synopsis already, it's quite, you know, intense. It has a lot going on there. And I think we're going to be covering some really interesting points today about what can be taken out about this and also relating it back to our experience and maybe some, you know, fun times that we first had. One of the main things that really sticks out for me about this play is the notion of the past. What does the past mean to us? Can we escape our past? In this play script and in the play, the past has shaped the lives of the individual characters. And there's this fantastic quote from Claire Zakanassian to Alfred Ill of, "You chose your life, but you forced me into mine."
Oh,
and I think it's really interesting to look into our past. And I think one question I can raise to you guys is, does our past predict our future? Is it better to relive our past, or is it better to forget?
Ooh.
Well,
that's interesting.
I'll just say that in the play, Claire doesn't forget. She really carries it with her until the end. Yes. It's just, it doesn't... It lives within her. So I think, you know, if we're going to talk about it in our own sense, it's hard to forget the past. I think it, whether you like it or not, it's always lingering behind you.
It's always going to come back. Yeah. Not necessarily to bite you, but it's always going to come back in some way, shape or form to kind of
be
present.
Yeah, I think it's always about being able to sort of have your past in arm's reach. You know, acknowledge that it existed and that it shaped you, but not have it affect you.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting. Another interesting theme I noticed with this play is, you know, sort of focusing on women's rights as well. Because women, you know, they didn't achieve full suffrage in Switzerland until 1971. And I just find it really interesting, you know, like you said, how we're very focused on this woman who is getting revenge for her loss of rights of, you know, being impregnated and then abandoned.
Mm.
You know, she's come back for revenge. But then again, you know, of course it does come back to that discussion of revenge and, you know, is it the best way to go? And you know, like you were saying before with the past, is it better that, would it have been better for her to have just let go of the past?
Yeah.
Or did she actually need, you know, did she need to get revenge in order to make peace?
It is a really, really, it's a tough point to raise. I think another point I'd love to raise about it is the idea of temptation and what temptation does for the town. Claire Zakhanassian arrives to this town with this money offer in exchange for the death of Alfred Ill. And it's really, there's this chorus line at the end, and the township are repeating sentences after the mayor saying they chose the, I don't really want to spoil it, but I think it is kind of fundamental to our discussion. They chose the death of Alfred Ill, not for the money, but for the sake of justice. And so they're trying to cover up this succession of their temptation. You can see they have given into temptation, but they're trying to admit that they're trying to pretend that they haven't.
Yeah, like it's a moral decision.
Exactly right. And I think that's really fascinating. And I think in this play, temptation acts almost as a virus. It spreads its way through the town and affects everyone, even those who would most likely be immune to it.
A bit of a mass hysteria, you could say.
And it's quite it's quite unfortunate. Sorry, Ben. One point before I bring it over to you, like to see that the temptation affecting, you know, people really close to Alfred Ill. It's quite hard, and it's through the yellow shoes, which we won't go into because there's a whole thing behind the yellow shoes. But, yeah, what do you think around this idea of temptation?
Yeah, the characters really, if I remember the play well enough, she kind of starts buying everyone off. And just no one can really handle it. Everyone starts, you know, these ideas of grandeur get in their heads. I think that temptation totally takes them over, and they try and make it look all smoke and it's all smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, yeah.
And eventually it bites Alfred Ill, but I think it hurts everyone else.
Yeah. And I think the power of temptation is emphasized hugely in this, you know, what temptation can lead to and how, you know, an increase in, you know, how you know, township influence can, you know, have an impact on temptation. One last one, we've talked about this a little bit already, is the idea of revenge. And I think in this case, revenge almost is portrayed to be a justice. There's another line, and it's the mayor speaking to Claire Zakhanassian, and he says, "Justice cannot be bought," and she says, "Everything can be bought."
Oh, good
it's
line.
It's such a good line. There are so many good lines in this play, and I think this is a really interesting one about, you know, what are our thoughts on this? Like, can we justify this revenge? Is it justifiable?
Look at the world now. Mm. You can buy anything. Mm. Anyone will believe you if you have enough money. Obviously, you know, we thank God that people can put that aside and do try and expose truth.
Mm. Yes.
But money talks, and it can also shut people up, as it does to this town.
Yes, it's quite tragic. And looking at that tragic comedy, it does have those tragic elements. It has comedic elements as well. And I think it's really great to have that comedy dotted throughout.
Yeah, it's a nice balance.
I think, I must say, it's probably one of the most clever combinations. I think it's very absurd.
Yes.
You know, tragic very, and comedy like, is like, oh, hang
yeah,
on.
Yeah, no, very like Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean? And I think it's, I think in this case, it very has the power to completely thwart audience expectation and divert sentiment really, really rapidly.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, you might be going something through really funny and then bang, oh, hang on a minute, something dramatic happens, we're back into that tragic element. So
yeah,
it's really exciting. So we may even come back to this after the song break, because I think there's some really interesting discussion to be had. But for now, it's actually time for a bit of a special song. 2 weeks ago, Hannah and I were fortunate enough to interview Nicholas Araya on 1700, so Sin's show for everything and anything Australian music. He has now released a new song this morning, This Night. It is an absolute bop. If you want,
I see what you did there.
I know.
This morning?
Well, This Night, This Morning. If you want to go find it, it is on, you can find him and Nico Arrow Music. He's on Spotify. He's on iTunes Music. It's an absolute bop. Listen to it now, and we're going to bring you back very soon. This is Sass, the Screen, Air and Stage Show. And that was an absolute bop, This Night by Nico Arrow Music. Please go follow him on all his socials. He released his song just this morning, so it is fresh on the charts, and it is absolutely an absolute bop. I can tell you that. So you are with Sass, the Screen, Air and Stage Show, the show where we talk about everything and anything entertainment. We are looking at foreign, the theme, the genre and all it entails, the wide world of it, I think. And we have a very special guest on today's show, Ben Polizon. Now, we're going to be doing a few check-ins now, but we're going to do one more check-in and see how you're going. Are you enjoying the show?
It's been really great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being such a good guest.
I'm having such a good time. It's been so good to talk.
Fantastic. So we've done a lot of discussion today, and we've really whipped through some amazing entertainment pieces. We looked at two films of Roma and Shoplifters, and we looked at two TV series, and then we also just finished our discussion on Friedrich Dürrematz and The Visit. Sorry, I just had to do that. but now we're going to do another check-in, and we're going to look at just some random entertainment pieces that can be from any genre, anything that we've seen in the past few weeks. Let's talk about them. Let's get discussing. Ben, what have you done?
Well, I wish it was foreign to keep on task, but it wasn't. It was American, and it was us. It was Jordan Peele's new movie. Horror movie.
Oh, Hannah and I love horror.
Oh my god, wait, it's like our favorite genre ever.
Because I love it so much. I think horror done right is just great. Mm. I don't know if you talked about it, but Hereditary, which came out last year, it's astounding. But Us was really, Jordan Peele has a very special touch.
Yes,
and he can make really scary things really funny, and that's what Us does. Mm. It's for me, it wasn't as scary as I would have liked.
Yes.
But it was...
Oh my God, I didn't fear for my life much. It's just really annoying.
I wasn't buying the scissors. I wasn't buying all the murder. I was just... But no, it's...
this is like a first on the show where someone's like really bothered by not being scared
not
enough.
Being scared.
I love a good scare. But it is... It's creepy. It's really creepy. Mm. And he's very smart, and it's a great concept.
I think connecting to the heist subgenre...
Oh, yeah.
The challenge to really bring out a really unique horror film.
It's tough.
I think it's a challenge.
It's really tough.
Do you think this one can be unique?
Oh, 100%. Mm. Jordan Peele made Get Out last year, and that was...
Right.
That was brilliant.
Okay.
So
yeah. He's got a really nice repertoire now.
Yeah, so these are his first two films, and it doesn't dip. He's keeping on track, and he's making some good stuff. So I would highly recommend Us if you can... get past the fact that it's a horror film. A terrifying horror film.
We're slowly getting there, you know.
One day
look,
we'll get
we
there.
We spoke about Scream the other day on air, so, you know,
true.
Like
one, you know what? Like
there.
Baby steps, you baby know? Steps. It's all about the baby steps.
We might do like the next 10 years. That
Like 10 more seasons of Sass before we actually watch a horror movie. What about you, Nick? What have you seen recently?
So this week I went and saw The Favourite. So another Oscar award winning film. Olivia Colman took out Best Actress in a Leading Role. And it's a really, really interesting film. And I know I say really a lot. I was thinking that the other day. I say really a lot, but I think it's just...
Is this really
a great film. I really think so. it's very interesting. Like, it redefines kind of the period drama. You know, it's 18th century England. Mm. And it's just quirky. There's so much going on. Like the tragic comedy, you've got tragic elements. You've got comedic elements. You've got joyful elements. And you've got really, you know, intense elements. And it's just shifting. It's shape-shifting. It's moving. And
was it a bit overwhelming?
Well, it's interesting you say that because... there were stages in which the editing got so full on that I was like, oh, hang on a minute. Whereabouts are we? Are we day? Are we night? Are we...
Mm.
But I think that's what makes the film unique. And I think you can see that that was deliberate to make the editing and to make just kind of the rapid juxtaposition between themes and what's happening and everything. That was kind of what it was aiming to be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, now it's, you know, people remember it for what it was now. That Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone were the supporting actresses, and I think all the acting performances were really phenomenal. Mm. Yeah, it's quirky, it's fun, and I think if you're up for a bit of a laugh, but also, you know, look, somewhat of a history lesson. I'm not sure how accurate it is.
How accurate.
You can go watch it. It is still in cinemas, but I think, yeah, it was definitely going to be one to remember. But very, very quirky. How about you, Hannah?
Good one. I'm actually going to take a totally different approach to this because you guys have spoken about two new movies. I have a lot of moments, especially with, like, watching entertainment pieces where I think I'm really not qualified to host SAS because there are some pieces where, like, I really should have watched it in order to host this show, but look, here we are. So for the past few weeks or so, a friend of mine has been showing me South Park, and I know what you're thinking, like, what, South Park, that's so random, but I grew up with all the other cartoons like Simpsons, Futurama, Family Guy, American Dad, not Bob's Burgers, that came a bit later, but but she's them. But I'd never seen South Park before. And so a friend of mine has started showing me episodes from, you know, like from like the 20 plus seasons. And I want to put it out there that it's a really interesting show from an analysis perspective. Because there are tons of amazing analysis videos online about it. I really want to promote a YouTube channel called Wisecrack. They give really good analysis videos on a whole range of things, but particularly South Park. Mm. And, of course, they also do Rick and Morty, if that's your jam. But I find that South Park, it's really interesting in exploring a lot of these different kinds of stereotypes all in one. If you don't know what the show is, South Park is pretty much about this redneck American town called South Park where it's just full of wacky characters. Everyone's, you know, so you've got the stereotypical Jew, you've got a black character named Token, you know, it's for like the Token character. You've got like Cartman, who's like your like the fat character. You've got Kenny, who's the character that always dies. You've got and so like it sort of just keeps going. There's a lot of low-key racism, but I think that's what makes the show really funny because it's very satirical.
It's interesting you say that because we spoke earlier on about Big Mouth, and I think it does have similar vibes. Personally, I'm not a big fan of this type of comedy. Sorry, a little bit of sass to throw out there because I think we were talking about it kind of, it tries to be funny in being crude and being very...
Very vulgar.
Very vulgar. And I think the comedy's almost lost. But I think, I know it is very popular, you know, American Dad, Family Guy, South Park, they're kind of all that same, you know, same underlying genre of what they try to evoke. But I think it can be a common debate that, you know, does it try too much to be funny and then throw in all this kind of, inappropriate behaviour?
I think I would agree. I think just because it is one of those shows that tries to be a little bit ballsy in terms of, oh, let's throw in a lot of, you know, jokes about, like, crap and, you know, and it's very inappropriate and quite racist, at times can be quite sexist. I mean, I think in saying that, if I want to put a positive spin on it, there is something to admire that it does own this. South Park, you know, it is the kind of show where they're not just throwing in all these racist jokes and they're being like, oh, what? No, we didn't mean it. It's, no, this is what the show is about.
Yes.
We are here to make people feel uncomfortable and make other people laugh because that's what they find funny. And at the same time, maybe highlight some interesting world issues. One of their later seasons, it might be season 20, but I'm not 100%, focuses a lot on Trump. And he is reflected as a character in throughout the season. And I did find that to be, there's a good analysis video on it with Wisecrack. It's really interesting kind of seeing how South Park tackles these real world issues.
Yeah.
There's also another interesting episode that sort of focuses a little bit on like climate change and that talk. And so I think it uses its inappropriate humor to also touch on some real issues.
You brought up a good point before, or a point I would love to jump off and connect it to horror, is that it makes us feel uncomfortable. Yeah. Do you think successful filmmaking, TV making, even stage making comes out of making the audience feel uncomfortable? Not even just uncomfortable, but do you think making the audience, you know, feel a real strong emotion, that proves to be successful? Because when I watch a horror film, I'm scared out of my brain. I run for the hills. She's but running. Do you think that makes it, and I know we've spoken about this, does that make it a successful film? Because it has this really profound impact on you. Rather than just watching, you know, another random film, you watch, you're like, oh yeah, like that was good, I got into it, and then like walking off forgetting about it 10 minutes later. Like, do you think leaving with an impact, making you feel uncomfortable, making you feel terrified, do you think that makes a successful film? Or do you think that just comes with the genre?
I think this is what... a teacher I had kind of brought this up. He said, why make something if you've got nothing to say?
Yeah.
So I think it's so important that even, you know, with kind of bizarre genres and things or ideas like crude humor and horror, you can say some really interesting things. Sorry, talking about Jordan Peele, Get Out touches a lot on racism, and it does it in a really subtle but smart way. And you kind of come out of the, you know, cinema going, what just happened? Did I just, you know, and I think that you can do the same with South Park and, you know, it's like, wow, they just said that. And that's really jarring, but it's true.
Yeah. And I think it's an amazing technique for audience engagement as well. It's not, you know, these kinds of movies and shows. They're not just, you know, I think about The Simpsons. It's one of those shows, it's an absolute classic, but you can have it on in the background and you're not going to be... That's right. You're not going to be too affected. These shows, they demand to be watched.
I think it's walking that tightrope of, you know, audience engagement but versus almost having some sort of storyline that everyone can follow. Because I think sometimes these sorts of entertainment, they can only be specific for some people. Like, not everyone's going to love horror. Like, but you know, not everyone's going to love horror, not everyone's going to, but sometimes everyone will enjoy a family movie, but maybe a family movie doesn't have as much, you know, impact. You don't know. It's a really, intriguing point, I think, something to leave audiences thinking
well, look,
about.
I think the important thing is that they're confident, which segues us into our next song. But I'll play a little bit of Demi Lovato for you with Confident, and we'll be right back. This is The Screen, Air and Station.
That was Confident by Demi Lovato, an absolute bop. We've had some fantastic bops today. You are on SAS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show with Nick Angus, Hannah Schauder, and our very special guest for today, Ben Polizon.
Thank you for being on the show today. We've had a really interesting discussion. We've been looking at the foreign genre, looking at pretty much two movies, two TV shows, and a play. Pretty
hefty. And a check-in.
We accomplished a lot in this show. So I've got a question for you guys.
Oh.
Just coming back to our theme.
This wasn't prepared.
I know. Sorry. This wasn't planned. What do you guys think is the most effective, I don't know if this is going to be the best wording, but what do you guys think is the most effective component of the foreign genre? What makes it so appealing to audiences?
I think... Just quickly, because I'd love to hand over to Ben, I think maybe just how it portrays a different culture and a different environment so vividly. It doesn't, you know, it can portray it so rawly, I don't think it's so raw and so vulnerable, in a raw and vulnerable way, that's what I want to say. And I think that portrayal of a different context and culture, I think is really significant. You know, with Roma, for example, I didn't know what Mexico City was like in the 1970s. No idea. But to watch this film, even though it doesn't, it kind of has the backdrop as almost, you know, a background to the film, you still just learn so much about it. And I think it's, you know, in this very vulnerable way in which, you know, you can really delve deep into it and learn about it. So I think it's a learning experience. And I think it's fantastic because it opens our eyes to, you know, what is out there, you know, and how, you know, what culture is out there.
Good answer.
And into pretty much connecting with Nick, that idea that we get to see cultures, but we also get to see how we're not that different, that despite all of, you know, different cultures and the way we do things, humans are very similar and, you know, we all feel the same things, obviously at different times, but
have a lot of the same issues.
Issues.
I think it's a really good point.
It's very human. I think cinema is human and we get to see that. Foreign films let us see that in a bunch of different contexts, and we can, even if they're not speaking the same language, we can still put ourselves in their shoes and empathize with them. I think it makes us more.
I think it's a really nice juxtaposition, your answers, because you're saying it's nice how it shows how different we all are, but Ben's saying that it shows how we can all be the same.
I think that's a beautiful thing to
I think
end
that's
on.
A really, that's a really nice message.
Did you have anything to add to that, Hannah?
Oh, I don't know. I think you guys did a fantastic job. Maybe just to add on to your point, Nick, it sheds light on misconceptions. And I think that's also really important. I think about Schissel, for example. Mm-hmm. That would be a really interesting insight for someone who's not Jewish to see, you know, that sort of ultra-religious lifestyle living in Israel.
Definitely.
Could be really interesting. And same with even, like, I think about, like, Bollywood movies even.
Yeah.
Could also give a really interesting portrayal. I mean, I know My Big Fat Greek Wedding is very far from foreign, but also, but you know, also kind of gives you, like, a cute idea of what these, like, you know, big family culture, big cultural families are like.
Yeah.
So I think with that, foreign does a really nice job of sort of, you know, really showing the people for who they are.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Whether it's, you know, all the same, all different, but foreign.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's a really nice note to end on.
Very
that brings
nice.
Us to the end of another jam-packed episode. Ben, thank you so much for coming
thank
on the show,
man. Thank you for having
being
me.
A wonderful guest. If you would like to find this episode and, of course, all of our other 30-plus episodes from the past 4 seasons, you can find us on omnistudio.com/sass or just head over to Spotify and all of our podcasts are there as well.
Also, our Facebook page, facebook.com/sassshow. Oh, there's so many S's in that sentence.
I think it's just SAS. Like, I don't even think you need the show.
Oh yes, SAS.
Which is pretty amazing.
And then SAS_show for our Instagram. I'm sure you'll be able to find us. We're constantly spamming through both.
We love that.
I'm sure you'll be able to find us. But yeah, all our episodes will be posted through there. So I think all we can say is another thank you to Ben. It's been a great episode. We are coming up to the end of season 3, which is a sad moment, but it doesn't mean we're going anywhere. So all we can say now is to remember to keep up with your screen, air, and stage. In other words,
stay sassy. Yay! We finally got a guest who could do it right. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next week.